this is a fairer way, a more equitable and just way of assuring that people are represented not just on the basis of where they live, but on the basis of what they think and they believe and the principles that they want to support.
We'll look at democracy around the world on this edition of Common Ground. Is a program on world affairs and the people who shape events. It's produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Keith Porter. In the United States, almost all elections are decided on a winner-take-all basis. The first candidate to get 50% plus one of the votes cast wins, whether it's for dog catcher or Congress, city council, or the White House. But in most of the free world, democracy is defined much more broadly. And Congresses and parliaments are elected by a wide variety of voting systems, which, loosely speaking, can be termed proportional representation, or PR. Ideally, if 25% of the people vote for Party X, then 25% of the seats in Parliament should be filled by members of Party X. Here to tell us more about how these voting systems work in practice are two people from the Center for Voting and Democracy. Rob Ritchie is the National Director, and the national chairman is former congressman and presidential candidate, John Anderson.
I think that it's probably worthwhile to note at this point that one of the encouraging signs for us who are in the Center for Voting and Democracy is that so many of these newly emerging democracies are adopting systems of proportional representation, so that in most cases they are parliamentary systems. The parliaments of these new democracies will be more representative and on a more democratically basis select the representatives of the people than we do in this country, where we have the old first-past-the-post system, which is a carryover, as the British have it, a carryover of the British system.
Mm-hmm. And Rob?
I think that there obviously has been this big move to democracy in Latin America and Eastern Europe and Africa. And one thing that this has shown, though, is that democracy is not just an easy thing to define. And probably the key element is the voting system, that how you translate people's votes into seats in a representative assembly are really the key to what makes a democracy function. And so that democracy won't just necessarily work unless we have systems that actually make people feel that they have a voice in their government and feel that democracy works for them. And so that I think that the reason so many countries have used PR and are still exploring modifications of proportional systems is that this will make democracy work for them, and it's just not just as simple as letting people vote. That there's more to it than that.
Okay. Well, Rob, why don't you tell us about the origins of the Center for Voting and Democracy and the mission of the center?
Well, there I think were a number of people around the United States who had realized that most of the rest of the world doesn't use the same form of democracy that we do, that they do use systems of proportional representation, but they were having trouble finding themselves. And basically what happened about 2-3 years ago is some of these people who've been talking about it, and I was one of them, began to find each other and realized that there's no organization in the United States that really focuses on this key element of a democracy, the voting system. And so there was a founding meeting a couple of years ago, and a big part of our mission is simply educating Americans about what other countries do, but also looking to raise the question of whether we might want to consider these systems for our own elections.
Okay. And Mr. Anderson, is there anything else about the center that you'd like to add?
Well, that there's nothing really either sinister or mysterious about the idea of proportional representation. Actually, it's been around since the dawn of the so-called progressive era in this country, which began about the beginning of the 20th century. and in numerous cities across the country, notably Cincinnati, in recent times have been willing to put on the ballot a proportional representation system method of electing members of the city commission or the city council. So it's not really a new idea, and particularly in the international realm, as I said earlier, newly emerging democracies are finding that systems of proportional representation, and there are various kinds. There's the single transferable vote. There's the mixed member proportional system, which they have in Germany, and which has really been the model, I think, for most of the Western democracies. This is a fairer way, a more equitable and just way of assuring that people are represented not just on the basis of where they live, but on the basis of what they think and they believe and the principles that they want to support.
I want to come back to those different forms of proportional representation in just a moment. But first, I hear both of you saying that this is a system used around the world, that many other countries are using it, that we are behind the times. What's the scope around the world? Rob, do you want to tell us how many other countries or some sort of percentage of the rest of the world that uses proportional representation?
Well, it's a lot easier to list the countries that don't have proportional representation than those that do. And they're actually quite definable in that they're Great Britain and former British colonies. France has another form of winner-take-all voting and some of its colonies as well. But so the India, New Zealand, though it's just voted to change, Canada, the United States, and some new democracies in Africa are the only countries that use a plurality voting system, meaning one in which you have single-member districts and several people run, and whoever finishes first in that district represents the whole district. So most other democracies, or all the other democracies, use forms of proportional representation. I think John was making a very key point that that it's not a monolith. There's almost as many variations of PR, as we call it, as there are democracies that use it.
Mr. Anderson, do you know the historical reasons why the U.S. and the other British colonies have been behind the times?
Well, it certainly isn't ordained by the Constitution of the United States. There's nothing in the Constitution that says we have to have single-member districts, that we have to have first-past-the-post plurality or majority elections in this country. And I think it was simply a carryover, as Rob has explained, of the British system. After all, most of our forebears, most of those 55 who met in Philadelphia, were used to the British system, and in the state legislatures in the 13 original colonies, which became the 13 original states, they carried that over into state elections and into congressional elections. But I would reemphasize, we don't need to amend the Constitution of the United States to have a fairer, more realistic system, electoral system in this country, namely what I would like to recommend, a mixed member proportional representation system, where about half of the representatives in Congress are elected from single member districts, and then you allocate or apportion half of the seats to parties or candidates on the basis of the percentage of the vote that they actually get in a given district.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that mixed member idea. First of all, who else uses a system similar to that?
It's not the form of proportional representation that most democracies in Europe use. Most use straightforward party list system with no single member district constituencies. However, I think that that more democracies are recognizing that there is a value in having that sort of constituency representation that does come with single member districts. And the country that set the standard was Germany, which after World War II set up a mixed member proportional system with the assistance of the United States and Great Britain, rather interestingly, and for a long time was the only democracy to use it. But many of the new democracies in Eastern Europe adopted the system, and then last year New Zealand, which had perhaps was the quintessential winner-take-all system. It was they had a system like ours, but they also had really no checks and balances on their parliament, so it was very much winner-take-all within parliament. And they changed to the German system, and I think pointing to the fact that the few democracies that use all single-member district systems probably will see a nice match with the German system.
Okay. Well, that raises a question in my mind, Mr. Anderson. You served in Congress, and so you're saying that we need to keep that part of the system that we currently have that allows me to call you and say my grandmother didn't get her Social Security check, or the road out in front of my house has too many potholes, the things that I call my current geographic member about. And you're saying we need to keep some of that.
Oh, I think that perhaps it would be less of a rude shock to the country if we did. Actually, I believe there's a good deal of exaggeration in what individual members of Congress do in that ombudsman's role. I think that a party, if you elected members to a legislature based on the percentage that their party list had received in an election, regardless of where these people were from, they would be interested in helping individuals who had problems with the government, be it a delayed check or something of that kind. But I think we can maybe allay the fears of people that this is such a radical shift that they would somehow lose contact and lose touch with their government by dividing the system, as I've indicated, and as the Germans do, between half of the seats going to the party list candidates who are elected and determined on the basis of the percentage that the party receives in the election, and then having some single-member districts where they are elected on the basis that we now elect all 435 members of the U.S. House. But if we want to really change the electoral system and eliminate gridlock in this country, promote the greater consensus that would come from people feeling that they really had a stake in the system, we should go to proportional representation. We should eliminate the necessity for creating the kind of bizarre districts that led to the decision by the Supreme Court in its last term, Shaw v. Reno, where you had a district running from Charlotte to Durham, North Carolina, 180 miles long, the width of a highway corridor, simply so that you could include blacks within that district and get a majority vote for a black representative. We shouldn't have to go through that kind of political apartheid, through what Justice O'Connor called this bizarre political apartheid, to allow black representatives or any other minority to be represented in the Congress.
We're talking in this edition of Common Ground with John Anderson and Rob Ritchie from the Center for Voting and Democracy. This is the first in a two-part series on democratic voting systems used around the world. Common Ground is a service of the Stanley Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. Printed transcripts and audio cassettes of this program are available. Please listen at the end of the broadcast for details.
I think that that the issue that John is raising about minority representation points to why so many other democracies adopted forms of proportional representation. You were asking earlier about how that developed. And when we first set up our democratic system, we had a very limited franchise. The right to vote was really restricted only to white men who, in many states, who had property. So that there was a relatively homogeneous voting population. When many of the democracies in Europe sort of set up their democratic systems, this franchise had been extended to more people, or their democracies were young enough when that happened that they were still sort of thinking about what's a fair system, and there was a recognition that there's diversity in our society, or in their societies, and that when you don't have sort of a homogeneous voting population, you really can't have one person representing a whole area where there's a lot of different kinds of people. And so that's where they broke away from the single-member district system and went to these systems that are defined completely by how voters vote. I mean, that's one point I want to make clear, that it's not any sort of quota. It's not proportions that are subjectively defined, but they're objectively defined by how people vote. And I think that's why they would speak to some of the concerns we have in this country about providing fair representation to our racial and ethnic minorities.
That raises a question in my mind about how this might work then, this mixed member system. I can understand what it's like to go into the ballot booth and look at this single member list of people who are trying to get the seat that's going to represent my geographic area. What would the other part of the ballot look like that would elect this party list that you talk about?
The most simple way to do it, which is what New Zealand just adopted, is to, you vote as you would in your single-member district race, and then you just have a list of parties. And the parties have been putting forth their platform, and you've been hearing a lot about the parties, and you vote for your party of choice. Some countries, like, for instance, most countries in Europe, when they put forward a party list, they actually list the whole set of candidates that the party is putting forward, and you might be able to express some preference on that list. You might say, well, I actually like that person best who's down there number 10, and if enough people vote for that person might move up on the list. But the simplest way would simply be to vote for the party. And that, so it just would be two votes rather than one, not too different in some ways from the fact that we already have different votes for different offices in this country.
And what it would do, importantly, I think, is to strengthen the role of political parties in our country, to make them more meaningful instruments of the people's will.
Again, this is John Anderson, national chairman of the Center for Voting and Democracy, and a 1980 candidate for President of the United States.
One of the, perhaps the dean of American political commentators here in Washington recently said, we don't have two parties. Most people think we're a two-party system. We have 535 parties. We have 435 congressmen and 100 senators, each running their own campaigns on their own individual platforms. And that's why we have gridlock. That's why we have dissensus rather than consensus in the Congress of the United States. If we want to really strengthen the democratic system and at the same time assure people that their votes really count for a candidate, I think that a mixed PR system would be one of the most effective reforms that we could make. And again, it could be done in state legislatures. It could be done by city councils, by county commissions, to elect local and state representatives. We wouldn't have to have a sweeping constitutional amendment, but people have to be educated to the reason why we think this is a basic reform in the electoral process that will give us better government, more responsible parties, and encourage people to come out and vote. People don't vote today. We barely get 50% voting in a presidential election anymore because they think, what's the use? My vote isn't going to really count. And when you think of it, under the present system, under the present first-past-the-post system, where you have two candidates, one of each party, 49% of the people can vote for the losing candidate, and really their vote has been wasted. A 51% majority vote means that the half who voted, or the 51% who voted for the winning candidate, can feel represented, and the others can be left feeling unrepresented. Proportional representation would deal with that particular voter syndrome that has led to apathy, indifference, and low voter turnout.
We have the second lowest turnout in the world, I think, of sort of well-established democracies. The other is Switzerland, and ours is only higher than Switzerland during the presidential years. And Switzerland happens to like vote all the time on referendums, so people get a little tired of it. But anyway, the other democracies usually have turnout well over 80%, and it makes sense because they have a wide range of choices, which is different from us, and they have a much greater chance of electing one of those choices, which is also different than us.
And it's important, I think, to note that our own Supreme Court has now taken the position that people have more than simply a right to cast a ballot, to go to the voting booth or to the precinct voting place and cast a vote, they have a right to cast an effective vote. Baker versus Carr, way back 30 years ago in 1962, Justice Brennan said that one person should have one vote. Later on, the Supreme Court came to the conclusion that that meant you had a right to cast a vote for someone that you really wanted to represent you. You can do that under a system of proportional representation. So it would really carry out what our own Supreme Court has said and believes and has confirmed, that there's something, and I think our national chair, Mr. Casalotto, put it very well when he talked about the infrastructure of voting, that after the vote is actually dropped in the ballot box, then you have to consider the system, the infrastructure whereby that vote is tallied. How is it counted? And if it's counted under the winner-take-all system, as we've just said a moment ago, you can leave literally 49% in a two-person race feeling that they've lost out and that the vote really didn't count. In a proportional representation system, you're going to come much closer to leaving the voter feel that he has been able to express himself effectively and to vote for the person that he really wanted to see elected.
I want to talk about some of these different forms of PR in just a second. First, I'd like Mr. Ritchie to talk about what happened in Canada in the 1993 elections. I know in one of your publications you termed it a lesson in unfair voting systems. Tell us what happened in Canada and why, and what could have been done.
Well, the 1993 elections in Canada provided an extremely instructive example of how winner-take-all can really distort what voters are trying to do with their votes. First, Canada has a parliamentary system, which I want to make clear is not a proportional system. Many people think when you say proportional representation, you mean a parliamentary system because so many parliamentary democracies use it. But it's really the method of electing the government, not how the government functions. And so Canada uses winner-take-all within its for its parliamentary elections, and in 1993 had two strong new parties run for office. So they already had three parties that won substantial numbers of seats, and suddenly they had five. And two of them had very strong regional strengths. The Reform Party, very strong in Western Canada, and the Bloc Québécois, which only ran in Quebec, but was very strong in Quebec, and they want to actually separate Quebec from the rest of Canada. And so that the dynamic of first-past-the-post means that the more parties you have, the lower the percentage of the vote it can take to win a constituency. So if you have two candidates, you need 50%, but if you have three, you might only need 35%. Well, that's what happened in Canada. You had, repeatedly three or four strong candidates running, and so that you had some rather remarkable distortions, particularly if you look by province. And I can quickly just talk about, say, some where the Reform Party did well. British Columbia, one of the, I guess it's the second biggest province in Canada, the Reform Party won 36% of the vote. But they won 75% of the seats, so that they got basically a lot of extra seats. However, in Ontario, they did pretty well. They won 20% of the vote, but they only won 1% of the seats. So what happened by province for the Reform Party happened to the Conservative Party, which had been the ruling party, had a parliamentary majority, just got wiped out. They got 16% of the vote nationwide, which certainly was a big drop for them from like 42% or whatever they had before. But they won only two seats, 0.7% of the seats. And so you had one of their major parties, a party that people had put years of effort into working for and thinking that this was their voice in politics, basically being wiped off the political map. That's not very stable for Canada. And the fact that the Bloc Québécois, which only ran candidates in one province, is now actually the official opposition party, is a rather bizarre situation, too. One of the big things people say about PR systems is that they're not stable. And I think Canada, fortunately, is a pretty stable society, so I think it can survive these really bizarre results. But at the same time, it's putting a lot of stress on their system, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with Quebec and with these sort of shifting political parties. And they could actually they could end up separating in some ways, which is also, I think, true of Italy, by the way, which we might want to talk about later.
Go ahead and talk about that. Tell us about Italy, and then also I want to talk about the two sort of emerging democracies of Russia and South Africa and how they're using some of these ideas.
Okay. Well, many people have heard, I'm sure, that Italy threw out its proportional representation system last year. Italy has had proportional representation for decades, and they had a system that had a very low threshold of votes that a party needed to win seats. That's when we talked about there being a range of systems. They had a kind of system that was a very pure form of PR. If a party got maybe only 1% of the vote, they would still win seats. That results in a number of parties winning office. And so in Italy, you often had 10 to 15 parties, and many people know about sort of the changing governments that went on in Italy. What I think a lot of people don't know is they actually had a very stable system in the sense that there was always some parties that were in the ruling coalition, and so their policy was very, very consistent after World War II, and the coalition in many ways was defined by it not including the communists. That was how the coalition was defined, and the communists would win maybe 35 to 40% of the vote, but never a majority. The other parties would get together and form a government. So there wasn't really some changes of party. Rather similarly, by the way, to our House of Representatives, which hasn't changed in 40 years from the Democrats. But anyway, the result was sort of a developing corruption that was tied in some ways to the fact that this coalition government really didn't change that much. But when they voted for change last year, they didn't actually vote the way it was portrayed in the U.S. press. They didn't vote to a complete winner-take-all system. I think if they had, it would have been catastrophic. But they did go toward that way. It's now going to be sort of like the German system, 75%. Will be from single-member districts and 25% from a party list used to compensate for some of the distortions that always will happen in winner-take-all seats. They'll be having an election in March, and what will be interesting to see is where parties do well in the single-member district seats. As in Canada, they have very strong regional parties, but probably the only party with a national strength is the former Communist Party, and they did quite well in their municipal elections. So in some ways, the hope for stability in Italy is now suddenly probably for the Communist Party to do well, because that's the only party that has sort of a national strength. Because otherwise, you're going to see there's a Northern League party up in northern Italy that wants to separate. There's strong parties in the middle and strong parties in the south. And if they actually, it's sort of like Canada, that if they do well in their individual areas, there's already a lot of tension within Italy that could result in fragmentation. Luckily, they do have this 25% proportional part as well, which will also provide more stability. But it will be a fascinating example of what happens when you have a lot of parties and you try to do it, throw them into winner-take-all districts. You're going to have people winning districts with only 20% of the vote, 15% of the vote. That's when you really could have some bizarre results.
Next time on Common Ground, we'll continue our look at alternative democracies and see how the people of Russia, South Africa, and Japan are working to design more equitable voting systems. We'll hear again from former presidential candidate John Anderson, as well as Rob Ritchie, both from the Center for Voting and Democracy. Please join us. I'm Keith Porter. For a printed transcript or audio cassette copy of this program, please send $5 per transcript or $9.95 per audio cassette plus $1.75 shipping and handling to Common Ground, show number 9406, Journal Graphics Incorporated, 1535 Grant Street, Denver, Colorado, 80203. To order by credit card, call 1-800-825-5746. For more information about the Stanley Foundation, please write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. However, to order cassettes or a printed transcript, please use the toll-free number 1-800-825-5746. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.